Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
Some chapters in history really expose the ugly impacts of war on individuals and communities. Of course, soldiers and their families suffer. But besides that, there are long-lasting impacts that carry through generations. These stories show us how a single incident or a single action can change the lives of countless people overnight. And one such chapter takes us back to the attack on Pearl Harbor. Welcome back, friend, to Hometown History. In today's episode, we will explore how the lives of more than 100,000 Japanese Americans changed following the attack on Pearl Harbor, and how, despite the lack of evidence against them, Japanese Americans faced sabotage, paranoia, and discrimination against their community. But before we move into the effects, it's important to understand where this hatred began.
December 7, 1941, a date which will live in infamy.
The attack on Pearl Harbor was an unexpected military assault by the Japanese Navy against the American naval base in Honolulu, Hawaii. It happened just before 8 a.m. local time on Sunday, December 7th, 1941. The key thing to know here is that at that time, the United States had not joined the war. It was still somewhat neutral ground. So this attack was basically one of the factors that prompted the U.S. to officially join World War II on the Allies' side the next day. But that's not the only thing that happened. Following this attack, the fear and suspicion toward Japan created a climate of mistrust towards Japanese Americans. There was widespread fear that people of Japanese descent living in the U.S. might align with Japan against America. And that was the beginning of it all. Coming back to our story, it takes us back to the presidency of Franklin Roosevelt. He was in his third term as president when World War II began, and on February 19, 1942, he signed Executive Order No. 9066, which put the Secretary of War and his commanders in charge of deciding where the military zones would be and who should be removed. This gave the military power over the Attorney General to make these decisions without any hearings or due process. Now that was unprecedented power for a president, which meant he needed others to support this order. He asked Congress to support Executive Order 9066, and it did, following it with Public Law 503, which supported the order. Although the laws did not specifically name any race or ethnic group, they allowed the military to impose restrictions on anyone it deemed a threat. And everyone knew who would be targeted as said threat. With that, military areas were created.
When the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor, our west coast became a potential combat zone.
And at first, curfews and other restrictions were imposed on everyone of Japanese descent when the evacuation began on March 22, 1942. The start of this evacuation was announced by news channels at the time, with a tone wavering between fear and contempt. One particular broadcast highlighted the evacuation without acknowledging that two-thirds of the Japanese evacuated were real American citizens. Instead, it used the derogatory term, Japs, to refer to the Japanese Americans. The news report inaccurately described the evacuations from the West Coast as voluntary, specifically mentioning that in Los Angeles, 36,000 Japanese Americans supposedly chose to sell their belongings in anticipation of leaving. Of course, we know that's not true. And this was only the beginning. Now, with as little as a few days' notice, and rarely more than 2 weeks, families had to decide what to do with their belongings. And those who delayed it any further became the targets of theft. Most of them had no choice but to store, sell, or abandon nearly everything they owned if they wanted to escape with their lives. The haste of these sales often led to significant financial losses because properties and valuables were sold for a fraction of their worth. There are countless stories of exploitation. For example, one woman had to sell her 26-room hotel for just $500, which is roughly $9,500 today. Imagine buying a hotel for that much money. Similarly, essential items like refrigerators went for less than $5. On another occasion, in a particularly desperate act, one man tried to burn down his own home rather than leave it behind, though his wife stopped him, reminding him of their dignity and humanity. With stories like these, plenty of once bustling neighborhoods turned into ghost towns. Stores shuttered, farms left abandoned. The only possessions people could take were what they could carry. So they were mostly suitcases, sheets, and blankets. And soon, over 120,000 people, from infants to the elderly, were uprooted almost overnight, without any due process or clear information. They were tagged and searched, uncertain if they would be deported or how long their imprisonment would last. And their troubles did not end there. Their relocation process lasted nearly 18 months. While thousands of these individuals managed to move east to avoid internment, the majority were herded into assembly centers, usually fairgrounds or racetracks, where conditions were terrible. They slept in horse stalls that were barely cleaned and still reeking of manure, and they were forced to make their own mattresses. Days turned into weeks, and weeks into months. Now, if you're thinking, what is an internment? Or why is this period called as such? Internment basically refers to the practice of holding people in confinement, usually without a trial, because they are considered a security risk or part of a group that is seen as a threat during a time of war or national emergency. But since there was never any actual evidence to start all of this, this seems to be an inaccurate description. And so the terminology used to describe this period has evolved. Initially called internment, many scholars and community leaders now argue that terms like incarceration or concentration camps more accurately reflect the unjust and oppressive conditions experienced. This shift in language helps acknowledge the reality faced by Japanese Americans, urging us to confront and learn from this dark chapter of history. Now, if we look at some of the more notable incarcerations at the time, a pivotal legal battle during this time was the Korematsu case involving Fred Korematsu. Fred Korematsu, a 23-year-old Japanese American, chose to defy the order, stating that all persons of Japanese ancestry, including both citizens and non-citizens, should be evacuated from these military zones and relocated to internment camps. He defied the order because he wanted to stay with his girlfriend and decided to take this bold step. But things were not going that easy for him. He was arrested, and his case eventually reached the Supreme Court, where he argued that the evacuation order violated his rights under the Fifth Amendment, which ensures that no person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
The Supreme Court, in a majority opinion written by Justice Hugo Black, ruled 6-3 in favor of the government and held that the wartime needed to protect against espionage outweighed Korematsu's individual rights. Justice Black then stated that the evacuation order Korematsu challenged was not based on racial animosity, but on a military judgment that national security required the exclusion of all Japanese Americans from the West Coast. But the decision wasn't unanimous. Some judges did oppose this radical idea. Justices Frank Murphy, Robert Jackson, and Owen Roberts objected, criticizing the decision as racially discriminatory. Justice Murphy notably described the policy as falling into the ugly abyss of racism, and he likened it of the discriminatory practices of tyrannical regimes, which the United States was actively fighting against in the war. Basically, he called the Americans hypocrites. This decision showed how fear and prejudice can lead to significant violations of civil rights, even in a country committed to democratic principles. But on the same day, there was another court ruling that came as a ray of hope for these prisoners. That unanimous decision declared that loyal American citizens, regardless of their cultural descent, could not be detained without just cause. This ruling effectively stated that while the removal might have been justified, the continued detention was not. And it finally allowed for the release of Japanese families in these camps. Anticipating the Supreme Court's rulings, the Roosevelt administration had moved to end the exclusions. On December 17, 1944, the day before the decisions were publicly announced, Public Proclamation No. 21 was issued, which rescinded the exclusion orders and declared that Japanese Americans could return to the West Coast starting the next month. So a month after the Korematsu decision, the camps officially began to close. But now there was another problem. After being disgraced and turned away, they couldn't just simply go back to their old lives. The law may be on their side now, but public opinion was not. They felt going back would open them up to hostility, and many of their farms had been either destroyed or burnt already. Despite the widespread fear of sabotage that led to the internment of Japanese Americans during World War II, by the war's end, not one person of Japanese descent had actually been accused of sabotage in the United States. It was clear that the reaction was much bigger than the actual threat. But isn't that always the case? Still, it took Fred Korematsu 40 years to have an opportunity to clear his name. With the help of a team of young lawyers, led by Dale Manami, this team argued that the courts must remain operational and independent, even in times of crisis, and not be dominated by arbitrary military decisions. They sought a judicial declaration to confirm that the actions of Japanese Americans during the war were not acts of espionage or sabotage, and that they were not traitors. Now, typically a Supreme Court decision is final, but Manami and his team reopened the Korematsu case using a rare and seldom successful legal motion called Coram Nobis. The Coram Nobis motion allows for a court case to be reopened if there is a serious error in facts or data that can change the outcome. So if, for example, you're convicted of murder, but years later someone now finds evidence that proves you weren't even in the country during the murder, you can call for a Coram Nobis motion. So legal historian Peter Irons discovered documents that showed that government lawyers had concealed critical evidence from the Supreme Court. On November 10, 1983, the U.S. District Court ended Fred Korematsu's conviction, effectively acknowledging the mistake that was made in his case. It was a major step in the right direction, even though we haven't heard so much about it since. It wasn't until 1988 that the U.S. Congress formally recognized and addressed the injustice with the passage of the Civil Liberties Act. This act not only offered a formal apology, but also provided reparations, granting each camp survivor $20,000, roughly equivalent to $53,000 today. The act was signed into law by the president at the time, Ronald Reagan, and sponsored by Congressman Norman Mineta, who was a former intern. And with that, ended a dark chapter in U.S. history. A chapter with universal condemnation, and one that is a reminder of the ongoing struggles against marginalization faced by various minorities in society. And that brings us to the end of our episode today. This chapter of history is another example, among many others, of the experiences and hardships of those who were unjustly incarcerated. So the question here is, how do we ensure the lessons learned from the past truly inform our actions today, preventing history's darker chapters from repeating themselves? Thank you for listening to Hometown History, and be sure to follow along for more interesting stories from the past.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.